Today's episode is brought to you by GM Street. It's a new podcast we're launching this Friday, hosted by Tate Frazier and former NFL GM Mike Lombardi. Oh, man, this is going to be good. The show is going to give you an insider's perspective to the NFL's biggest storylines week to week. You can find it on the Ringer NFL Show podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you get podcasts. Welcome to the Ringer NBA Show. I'm Chris Vernon. Joining me today is a former NBA player and champion and agent now for the Wasserman Group. Represents Derrick Rose, Draymond Green, Bismack Biyombo, JaVale McGee, Denzel Valentine, and a slew of others for the Wasserman Group. He is BJ Armstrong. What's up, BJ?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Appreciate it, and thanks for having me on.
So before I get into all the business of basketball and NBA topics I want to get to you with, I do want to ask you, because March Madness is upon us. Once upon a time, you were a star guard for the Iowa Hawkeyes. What does BJ Armstrong remember the most about tournament experience?
Well, what I remember most about it was how special it was to partake in such a great tournament. And, you know, the excitement, the thrill of not knowing that where you're going to get seated, where you're gonna play, and I just remember it was an exciting time for the guys, the coaches, the athletic, your athletic department, and of course the fans. So it was always great, and playing under that much pressure, you know, where 40 minutes, every possession, every shot means something. Well, it was just a great time. So it was very exciting, and I was very fortunate to play in that for all 4 years while I was in college. And 1 year, I think it was in 87, we reached the Final Eight, and we ended up losing to UNLV to go to the Final Four, a team with Armin Gilliam and the great coach
Tarkanian.
Jerry Tarkanian, yeah, was there. So but it was great. We loved it. I loved it. I loved the experience, and it's always a great time of the year, and I have fond memories of March Madness.
It's crazy. I went back and looked it up, right? So in 87, you lose in this epic game to UNLV. Turn around the next year, and you get to play UNLV in the tournament again, and you beat the brakes off of them before ended up losing to Arizona. And that Arizona team had Steve Kerr, Tom Tolbert, Sean Elliott. It had Kenny Lofton, who turned out to be an amazing baseball player.
Oh, thanks for the memories. You know, I'm trying to forget all this. Don't forget that UNLV team that we lost to, we were up 20 at half. So, you know, I had great memories, but also these memories hurt. Sean Elliott and Steve Kerr, they constantly remind me. Jed Buschler and all those guys. Kenny Lofton was like, I played professional baseball and I beat you, you know? So these guys are always giving me a hard time, but that was a great team. And they made it to the Final Four, I think. I don't think they won it that year, but, you know, that was a great team as well. Like I said, it was always great to play in the NCAA tournament.
Okay, so now the cloak is off, I can expect that your entire first answer was total baloney. Like, you resent your memories of the NCAA tournament are horrible.
Oh yeah, it's awful. I'm sitting here. I won't even watch the games now because of my memories. But no, it was very competitive, and like I said, it was definitely tough. It took me a little while to get over that. I just remember. I feel for all those kids who lose, you know, and there's only one team every year that wins the final game of the season. But you know what? It was a lot of fun, though. Very honest, it was great. You win some, you lose some, and the deeper you go, obviously harder it is to lose. So, you know, I experienced the ups and downs of that tournament, but it was a lot of fun to participate.
Your name always stands out when you get quoted as Agent BJ Armstrong, because people remember you from your playing career. Yet, what I'm fascinated by is you don't hear that. Like, when somebody says his agent blank, it's almost never a former player. And I don't know how many are in. There are certainly very few, and not that have been extremely successful. Why do you think it is so uncommon for former players to become agents?
You know, I can't answer that. I really don't know, but I can share with you my story of why I decided to get into the business. You know, when I played, I was just always curious about how things were happening. And, you know, you take go back as far as when I was in college, like, you know, how come that cannon sign was on, you know, on the rafters right there? You know, how did Spalding become the official basketball of the NBA or what have you? So I was just curious about this business. You know, why were we playing on CBS? Why were we playing on ESPN, Big Monday? And I was just very fortunate. I played with this guy in Chicago named Michael Jordan, who was just as popular as he was as a basketball player on the court. He was more popular off the court. So the business of basketball was exploding right around the same time that ESPN and all these other, you know, cable networks were coming into play. And television was a big part of this growth outside of the game. So I was just fascinated always about the business. And I had an up-close and front seat of watching Michael Jordan, how he was creating this brand that no one else had created. You know, Magic was big, Larry Bird was big, Dr. J was big, but they weren't reaching the audience that a Michael Jordan was able to reach some years later. And I was just fascinated with it. I was fascinated with the growth of contracts. I was fascinated with how the game was expanding globally. And I wanted to know this entire business of what I was a part of, but I just wanted to know how it worked from the inside out. And that's why I became an agent, because I felt it would have been very helpful for me if someone had the opportunity to explain how this all worked. You know, not just showing up in shorts and a tank top and playing in a game and getting 15 to 20 points. No, I wanted to know how this business really worked. I wanted to know how, you know, Samsung became the official phone of the NBA or whatever the partner or the partnership was. And I was just, I saw Michael. I saw how he was able to work within and around the system. I saw how he was choosing certain partners to work with and not to work with. And I saw how entertainment and sports was all coming together. You know, it's some type of hybrid now where you're getting your, because you're competing against other entertainment, you know, entities, if you will, to compete for that, for their dollar, for their viewership. So I just became fascinated. I'm still fascinated with the business. I'm fascinated now with podcasts. I'm fascinated with where this business is going to be a couple years from today. So this whole social media thing and how it evolves to me, just, and like, I'm just always curious of where the business is going to go, and that's how I got in the business.
Well, there's the business side of it, BJ, but isn't a lot of it the maintenance of players and those relationships and taking care of what they need taken care of? And so it strikes me that maybe some former players wouldn't want to put up with that side of it.
Well, I think the one thing that I learned as a player, the one thing I learned in business, is understanding is the solution to whatever problem you have. If you don't understand what you're doing, you know, now that's where you kind of get into this gray area. And what I found as an ex-player, I understand that lifestyle that they're into. There's nothing going on in the NBA or college athletics that I don't understand. I was there. I saw it firsthand. So when a player calls me about he wants to be traded and they want to do all those things, that player and I can have a different conversation. Because, no, getting traded is not always the best solution. You know, so, you know, from that perspective, I think I have a pretty good grip on what this league is all about behind the scenes. The business part of it helps them understand the reason that we're doing what we're doing and how this business really works. So, yes, you are playing in sports. Yes, you are. Your job is to perform. But if you don't understand the reason that we're doing what we're doing, because this is short-lived, you know, this NBA is only 3 to 4 years. That's the average lifespan. You know, everyone thinks they're going to have this 10, 12, 13-year career. No, that's not the reality of the situation. The reality is we have a 3 or 4-year window at, you know, we have a better chance of only doing this for a very short time than we do to have 10-plus years. And I was very fortunate to play 11 years, and I had no idea that the odds that I was beating by doing that. But now I've come to understand that, you know what, when you have a LeBron James or you have a Dwayne Wade or a player that plays for a length of time, that that's very special. And our job, or my job, is to help these people understand the facts. And I don't think, I think so many people focus these young kids on the stars of this league and don't understand the reality of this league. And that is where I think I'm a little different. I'm not impressed by the stars. I wasn't a star as a player, but I was able to play and have a very successful career by not being a star. And everyone in this league can't be a star. And everyone in this league won't be a star if you're going to be in this league. And I just think I have a different perspective. And I probably, because of my playing days, I probably can say things to probably these kids that maybe a person who didn't play probably couldn't say or didn't understand themselves.
That makes sense. What's the hardest thing to get across to them on the way the business works that players don't quite grasp?
Well, I think the hardest thing for people to understand is to answer the question that I think we all have to answer is, who am I? Who am I for real, right? We all come out of college, we're the star player, right? We get the ball, we get the shots, we get the plays. Everyone in the NBA was at one time or another a star, whether it was high school, collegiate, in Europe, or whatever your avenue of coming to the NBA. The hardest thing to get people to understand is that you don't have to be a star to play in this league, and getting young people to learn how to play without the ball. That's the hardest thing. You know, the hardest thing for any player is to learn how to be an effective player without the ball, because up until that point, you've always had the ball. So the player that makes the transition from learning how to play without the ball are probably the most successful players to ever play in our league. As great of a player as Michael Jordan was with the ball in his hands, because he's truly magnificent, he was phenomenal with his fundamentals of knowing how to play without the ball, which allowed players like myself to play alongside him. I think that's the hardest thing for any young player to learn, is to learn how to play and be an effective player without the ball. And once you can get young people to understand that, now you have the ability, with so many wonderful, young, talented players, to build a team. And I think that's the hardest thing. You hear coaches talk about it all the time. That's why they always want experienced players, because, you know, at 7, 8, 9 years, you understand that it's impossible for me to do everything on a team. And young players, that's a very hard thing for them to learn, because their entire life they've had the ball in their hands and they've always been very good. But up here, that's not the case if you're going to be on a good team in the NBA.
Do you go out of your way to target those guys? Because obviously I look at the client list and you got, you know, guys like Draymond and Denzel Valentine, right? I feel like in part you're talking about guys exactly like that. And so whenever you're recruiting guys, you're deciding who you want to represent. Is it typically?
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I look for two things. I look for two things that I've learned that works up here at the NBA level. It's talent. Clearly works. You got to have a certain level of talent to play up here. And you have to have a certain level of mental toughness. Physically, you don't have – Reggie Miller wasn't the most physical, imposing figure I ever played against when I played. But mentally, he was very, very tough. So I always look for very tough-minded people, because tough-minded people can handle the truth. All right? You have to be coached up here. Every great player that I've ever seen wanted to be coached. Because it's such an advantage to be organized as a team once you come out on the floor, so that you can perform and do your job. So it goes right into everything that we just talked about. If you don't want to be coached, if you don't have the ability to understand what constructive criticism is all about, if you don't have the ability to understand how to function within a group, you'll never be successful up here. So I look for those two things, talented players and tough-minded players. Because those tough players can understand that, you know what, you don't have to have the ball and me call plays for you to make a contribution to us to win and be a successful team. And those players are the players that I look for in college basketball that can make that transition, because there's very few of us that actually have what I call that standalone talent. You know, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, those guys are standalone talents. They can go to any team and be who they are. But most of us, we have to get the right fit, and we have to be in the right setting for us to really do what we do. And there are a few players. Russell Westbrook is a standalone talent. He can just go out there and do what he he'll go average 25 wherever he's playing. But some of us need to be in the right place, the right situation, the right system. And that's what I look for those guys who can understand and really be honest with themselves. And I just call it being radically honest with who you are and what you're going to be in this league.
It feels, because a lot of guys don't want to hear that, and it just feels like the whole, like when you're talking about the tough-mindedness stuff, it feels like even more important than ever, given all the distractions, because if you are young and you're not playing well, you know, it might be your coach is jumping on you, and then you just call your mom and dad or you call your agent, you can bitch to them, whatever, but you didn't used to go on your phone and have like a million people telling you how bad you suck. You know what I mean? Like, and these guys, they do, right? You post an Instagram photo and like the comments are, you suck. Or you tweet something right. And it's like, stop tweeting, go to the gym, you suck. You know what I mean? Like, now, if you're not tough-minded, like if you take that stuff to heart and you let it bother you, it can kill guys, right?
Yeah, and again, that's the toughness that I look for. You know, I try to always help the guys to understand the environment in which they're playing in. Social media is here and it's here to stay. And it's part of the system, it's a part of our culture. And you have to understand what social media is and how to use it properly. And you have to understand that so that you can utilize all of the resources and things around you to do your job. If you can't say no and get off of your social media, I find it very hard for you to be able to perform up here because you're constantly on social media wondering what people are saying about you. At some point, you got to turn it off and you got to go out there and play. And if you can't accept criticism because it's so prevalent in our society today, I can post during the game. You miss a shot, I can tweet immediately, man, you stink, man. Trade this guy or what have you. So having this mental toughness to me is an advantage that's going to allow you to get rid of all the background noise. In the end, you're going to be evaluated on your ability to perform inside those lines. And do you have that ability to do that? And are you tough enough to do that? Sounds easy, but people are really distracted by the things outside of the game. You know, you hear a lot of trash talking. You hear a lot of guys tweeting and Instagram and Snapchatting and all these things. But in the end, who has the ability to turn that all off and just focus in on what you get paid to do, which is perform and play and do it to the best of your ability?
As an agent, how much coaching do you have to do regarding that? And how much monitoring? Do you just constantly monitor what everybody is doing that's on your client roster?
Well, the thing that I constantly remind myself now that I'm 50 myself is that at one point I was, 20, 21 years of age, and allow young people to grow, all right, and allow young people to make mistakes. I'm constantly encouraging my kids and my clients that yes, I've made mistakes and I will continue to make mistakes. But it's the people who are the most successful are the self-correcting people. How many times can you self-correct? How many times can you correctly, self-correct yourself to go about doing things and say, okay, I made a mistake here, but you don't need me to, like, I know it all or like I was perfect. No, I did the same mistakes that you did at 22, 23 years of age. But self-correcting people are the most successful. So I'm constantly encouraging them to have the ability to reflect and understand, what works and what doesn't work in this league, in this business that you've chosen. So I try to empower them. I try to make them responsible for their decisions and not judge them on making good or bad decisions. Most of the things that they're going to do or have done, I've done it. Thank goodness I didn't have cell phones to record everything that I did wrong. Thank goodness there was no social media back then when we were playing. So to me, it's an evolution. I just try to really encourage the young kids, be who you are. I'm going to be here for you. And if you do decide or choose to listen to some of the things I have to offer, or some of the things, because I'm just talking to you from experience, maybe it would help you avoid some of those pitfalls that you're going to go down. But again, mostly what I'm here to do is to encourage them because they know what they're going through. I've already done it. So I think that's very helpful for them, because I wish I would have had that when I was a player, that I could talk to someone who had already done what I was about to go through.
Well, not naming any names, but, like, in fairness, you never, like, Snapchatted a picture of your wiener or something. And, like, when something like that happens, do you just laugh about it, or do you get mad about it?
I do. You know what? I most of the stuff that happens, I do laugh about it, because I always wonder, like, what were they thinking? Like, and then I always try to put myself in there, like, if I was 20 years old, would I be doing that? And the answer is probably yes, you know? I mean, so, again, I try to have a sense of humor about it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what's great about it is you love to see a young kid who, you know, is at 21, 22, and they may do things that's crazy. But then at 28, 29, it's also beautiful when you see a young kid who matures and is going on and has a family who is taking that responsibility of a dad, who is growing into this role and maturing and doing those things. So the most rewarding thing is not where you start, but it's how you finish. Because what I really do as an agent, once the air comes out of the ball, is where my work really begins. You know, as long as Allen Iverson can score 30 points a night, hey, he's too big of a talent for you not to take a chance on that. Now, when the ball stops bouncing, when you take the air out of it, that's where B.J. Armstrong comes into play. Mm-hmm. You know, who is that guy that now he can't score 30 a night? So most of this, I just kind of smile at it, because I've seen so many things over the years that now I'm just kind of like, okay, that's just part of, you know, what this environment is that we've all chosen. But the real life starts, you know, once you retire at 35, you know, now guys are playing at, you know, 38, 40 years old. Watching Vince Carter down there play, I mean, it's great. And so, you know, I just think it's just kind of a human experience. So, like I said, I just have fun with it. But it's great to see young people mature and grow into the people that we all knew they could become.
All right, BJ, I want to ask you about this new collective bargaining agreement, how it's going to affect things. But first, I want to tell you about Simply Safe. Did I close that window? Did I lock that garage? These questions can nag at you while you're out of the house, running errands, or relaxing with friends. It can drive you nuts. But thankfully, you don't have to worry anymore if you've got Simply Safe Home Security. Because with an arsenal of sensors equipped to protect your entire home and family, Simply Safe offers an extra layer of protection that'll put your mind at ease. Not to mention, just recently, Simply Safe released a high-definition camera that connects to your security system to your smartphone, so you can see everything that's going on at your house, no matter where you are. No more wondering. And best of all, it's only $15 a month. That's a third of what other companies charge. No long-term contracts, no hidden fees. Simply Safe has got rid of everything that makes most home security such a pain. They won't gouge you. Go check Simply Safe and the new camera today. You'll get an exclusive 10% discount when you go to simplysafe.com/ringer. That's simplysafe.com/ringer. There was the new CBA that was signed by the Players Association and the owners. The biggest changes in your mind to the business of the NBA with the new collective bargaining agreement?
Well, you know, I haven't had a chance to read it. We haven't had a chance to read all the details. But I think some of the, you know, the big changes clearly are, you know, the rookie scale contracts, what the max players could possibly, you know, earn in this league. And I think the big thing for the players is to continue to, you know, fight for their share of the revenue that this league is making. I mean, that's just like it's the right for the owners to fight for their share of the revenue that this league is making. I think the one thing that we all can, and when I say fight, I mean everyone should negotiate the best deal they can on their behalf. The players should, the league should, and then you try to get to that sweet spot, that common ground where everyone can benefit from the popularity and growth of this sport, of this game. So I haven't had a chance to read the entire collective bargaining agreement. You know, we've seen details, we've got like notes on what it is, but I'm just waiting to see the details so that I can really understand of not what it looks like today, but what it's going to look like and how that's going to play, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. Because in the end, you know, you want to have the entire picture so that you can give the best advice that you possibly can on behalf of your clients. So I'm waiting to get that as well.
One of the things we know that's going to be in it is the expanded rosters. And I'm interested in your point of view on this, because you've got you'll have the extra two players that can be flex players that can go back and forth from the D League team that a franchise may have to the NBA team, right? So do you think that is going to be a big enough carrot for guys to want to, that more guys are going to want to be involved in the D League rather than? Because as I understand it, when you're in the D-League, you get paid D-League salary, and then when you get called up, you get NBA salary, and you can just toggle back and forth. That being said, will that be a big enough carrot for guys, and I know you represent a lot overseas, that more guys will want to go the D-League route rather than going overseas to pursue their professional dreams?
Well, my initial thought without seeing it is, I always encourage the guys that I work with that, you know what, give yourself the best opportunity to have a career. You know, don't look at the short. Would you rather just play 1 year in the NBA and be done, or would you rather go overseas and play for 12 or 13 years at whatever, $500 to $1 million tax-free? So I'm always encouraging people to think in the big picture. My initial thoughts when you were saying that is, okay, what exactly? The NBA is not a league where you come to develop. You know, the D League is not the place where you're going to develop as far as playing. The game isn't played the same as the NBA. I'm not going to find Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose, Damian Lillard. I'm not going to see that level of athlete in the D League. I'm not going to get the same coaching in the D League that I'm going to get in the NBA game. But what I can get is to maximize my time. Right now, if the D League contracts are as competitive as the contracts that are abroad, then that's a different conversation. So my initial thought is, okay, what does this involve? And how am I going to give my client the best opportunity to have a career? And I don't think having a 5-year career in the D League matters more than, say, playing over in Madrid, Spain for Real Madrid. So if you given the opportunity, I just want to give them the chance. Not that you will make the NBA or not, you won't make the NBA. I want to give them the chance to have a career for themselves where they actually maximize their time and their effort and their energy. So I don't know what those contracts are, and I'm not here to say whether the D-League is the right thing or the wrong thing, but I always encourage the players to think long-term and invest in yourself. You should always invest in yourself. And if you are the player that you think you can become, then look at it as, you know, I have an opportunity to play for 10, 11, possibly longer. If you take care of yourself, and you're lucky enough not to have any significant injuries. So I always encourage people to think big picture.
Has your perception of the D League changed over the course of the last couple of years? Do you have higher thoughts on it than you used to, or no?
Well, right now, the way it's structured, the D League is kind of figuring out what it wants to be. You know, is it a league where we're clearly just taking young players and trying to get them ready for the NBA? Is it a place where teams are like a farm system a la Major League Baseball? What is it going to be? Are we going to mimic how we play in the NBA so that these players can, you know, what is it? You know, we got to figure it out. It has to have an identity of what it is, what it wants to be. But more importantly, I think we have to give these kids an opportunity to figure out how to create a career for themselves, right? You know, if you're a young player, maybe if you play down there for 1 year and then you had a chance to go, that's, you know, maybe that's an idea. But I don't think long-term playing in the D-League is not your best option. So right now, I think the D-League now, I think it has the support of the NBA, but I think the NBA, I think the D-League doesn't want to compete with college basketball. So there's a fine line in here of not taking away the best. You don't want the best players in college basketball to say, you know what, why go play at a major college university? I can just play in the D-League. So I think that there's a fine line of trying to figure out what it really wants to be and what's the best long-term solution so that everyone will, you know, have an opportunity to continue their business. And, you know, let's face it, you know, college basketball has always been, you know, the NCAA has always been a place where the best talent has come from in this league, in the NBA. So I think it has to figure out what's its place in between college basketball and the NBA. Now you have this dig league, and what is it?
Okay, that being said, if it was B.J. Armstrong's vote on the age limit, where do you come down? And what should it be if you don't agree with what it currently is,
well,
which is created?
I don't think it's so much an age limit, because and I'll give you an example. LeBron James was ready to play at 18. Kevin Garnett was ready to play. Kobe Bryant was ready to play. So clearly there are some players that are ready to play. The responsibility is on the adults who are making these decisions to determine whether they're ready to play. I don't have to draft them just because they put their name in the draft. Now, that puts the enormous responsibility on the teams to do their work. No one is making these teams draft these kids. Just because they put their name in the draft doesn't mean that I have to draft them. That's very important. Just because I have to be able to see a LeBron James and make the proper evaluation on LeBron James. But no one will tell you LeBron James wasn't ready to play at 18. He was. But then that doesn't mean that another kid who may be the number one player in high school that year, he may not be ready. And I have to be able to see that and make that decision as well. I can't compare the number, just because this player is number one or this player is number two, to say that he's going to be the next LeBron James. That's not going to happen. So for me, the responsibility, I'm placing it on the adults who are making these decisions.
So do you
believe, what are we doing to properly evaluate these players so that we can say, yes, he's ready, and no? And that way the responsibility is on us, not the players putting their name in. If you put your name in and you're afraid not to draft this guy because you might miss the next guy, then to me it seems like maybe you guys aren't doing your homework. But that's just me. Just like when you ask me about the type of kid that I recruit, there's a certain kid that I like to recruit. I just don't go and recruit anyone. I'm looking for a certain thing that I think will be able to partake and perform in the NBA. I think that is what it is we need to be as NBA executives, is what works up here and be able to stick to it, and more importantly, give ourselves the opportunity to draft that player. We don't have to draft every 18-year-old just because they put their name in the draft.
Okay, so you think kids should be able to leave after high school?
Well, look, who am I to say right, wrong, or indifferent? I'm not here to say whether it's good or bad. I have my thoughts for me based on what I believe and how I grew up. But every situation is different. I can't play. Every situation is a different decision. Just like every kid that I recruit, I have to recruit and look at that kid and his unique situation. So every situation has a different story, a different storyline, a different need, a different things that they want to achieve. I have to look at what kind of person is this, you know, as compared to this type of person.
Yeah, right. But so it has to be. But BJ,
I just can't,
you know,
group everyone. I can't just group everyone into the same and put them all in one bucket and say 19 or 20 or what have you. Every situation, I want to look at that unique situation.
Yeah, because
that's how I look at.
But it has to be a uniform rule. It has to be a uniform rule that the NBA has. They just have to decide, do you have to go to college for a year, or can you leave straight after high school, or do you have to go to college for 2 years, or whatever it may be. right? I mean, it can't. I get that you have to look at it as a unique situation,
sure.
But the NBA just has to have a flat rule that applies to everyone.
Well, I mean, if that's their choice. I'm not here to tell the NBA how to do their business. That's their choice. You know, that's their decision that they have to abide by. Again, to me, it's about people. And I look at people for who they are and not from what I want them to be. So if that's the NBA's route, hey, so be it. I will deal with that. But every kid that I look at is a unique kid. Every kid that I meet or every person that I meet, I look at that person for who they are. So, but that's the NBA's decision, and that's their business, and I'm sure they'll figure it out. But for me, I just, you know, I want to look at that person and treat that person, you know, for the person that they are allowing me to see. And every person and every kid that I've met, they all have different needs. They all have different things that they're able to, some things they can do, some things they can't do. And I just want to look at that unique person for who they are and not for, you know, something that I'm just going to impose my will because that's a rule. I don't know if that's the right thing as well.
Understood. All right. I got a little confused. Let me just phrase it this way. If you ran the league,
what would the rule be?
Well, if you ran the league, what would the rule be?
If I ran the league, well, I mean, that's a big question, right? That's a big question. And that requires more than just saying a 19-year-old kid or a 20-year-old kid. If I ran the league, my first thing would be is I firmly believe in the educational system and the education and helping people to understand what they're walking into will help me do my business. Okay? And what I mean by that is this league set up to handle the problems of a 19 or 20-year-old league? Are coaches prepared to handle the problems of today's youth? Is this league and as executives, are we prepared to handle today's youth and what comes with it? So my before I can answer that question, I got to first look at myself. You know, when I start looking in this league and I'm getting judged as a coach on wins and losses, what am I really expecting to do when I have a 19-year-old kid? Now, I'm going to get fired as a coach because I'm not winning games. But then what am I really expect when my owner or my general manager drafts a 19-year-old kid? But then the media is going to come down on me for not winning games.
Well, and in fairness,
and
even
all the way to college.
In fairness, even in your position,
so
right?
To me, it's what type of environment that I what do I truly expect? Because as an NBA business, I am charging premium prices to watch the best players in the world. So to me, it just comes down to what am I trying to do business wise, and two, what kind of environment can I have which it allows me to develop and perform at the same time? Because you can't do both. Either you're going to commit to developing this 19 or 20-year-old kid, or you're going to commit to winning basketball games. Now, winning basketball games requires, for the most part, experienced players. So to me, it just comes down to what is the business that we are trying to achieve as a league? And I don't have the right answer for that because clearly you don't want to miss a LeBron James, a Kobe Bryant, a Kevin Garnett, a Dwight Howard. Those are special talents. I don't have the answer, and it's a bigger question than just saying what should be the age group, 19 or 20 years old. You have to look at the big picture and what you're trying to achieve as a league. And I think that requires all 30 teams, all 30 owners, and the people that work in this league to really figure out what are we trying to do, because clearly some of the best players in our league, even today, are the younger players who've all come out one and done, the Carmelo Anthonys, the Derrick Roses, or the kids who came straight out of high school. That's a fact. Now, what are we going to do as a league if the best players in the league are the younger kids? We have to address those issues, and we can't just overlook them and say what we did in the past, because it's a new game, it's a new era, it's a new league, and these kids have different things that you have to address. So I just think it's a bigger picture that we're not diving deep enough into before we can really come up with a educated, because I believe in the educational system, an educated solution to what we have here.
At the very beginning of our conversation, one of the things you talked about was letting guys know what they are, that was the most important thing, business of basketball-wise. Well, you have got this odd, probably insane collision course in this with not just a role player type guy, but a guy you just mentioned, Derrick Rose, who you have been part of Derrick's story since he first came into the NBA. And you have this just ridiculous ascent to MVP status in the NBA. And then a career that got crippled by injury after injury for some amount of time. And now there's been this season with the Knicks, which obviously the Knicks stuff hasn't gone all that well. And Derrick has not been all-star, MVP level, whatever. If you can, just tell me like the emotional story of Derrick Rose from your perspective and kind of how that ties into the whole, you know, what you are, what you used to be. You know, we mentioned Vince Carter earlier, right? Like, here's a guy that carries himself. He plays a role now in the NBA
right. And
shoots three-pointers. Once upon a time, Vince Carter was the biggest thing in the world, right? And so
right. It's
hard to be the biggest thing in the world. And you represented a guy that was in Derrick at one moment in time for that flashpoint when he's the MVP of the league. He's got the billion-dollar shoe deal, and he's got everything going, and then it kind of falls apart on him for a couple of years. Just tell me what that whole thing has been like over the course of his career.
Well, I think in that particular case, I think, again, when you understand that injuries are a part of the game, no player is going to play this game without having an injury. You hope that you don't have a significant injury during any time of your career. And I'm very sensitive to that because there have been many injuries that have cut great players' careers short, you know, a la Grant Hill. You know, Grant Hill, without question, was a Hall of Fame talent until he had, you know, he had that injury. It's just an example. You know, Michael Jordan, people forget that he, you know, set out for a year and a half or two with a foot injury, you know, for a significant amount of time. So no player is going to escape an injury. You just hope it's not a significant injury. What has it been like for Derrick? Well, I think it's probably been talked about more than actually what really happened. He had a significant injury during the course of a game, a playoff game. Okay? He didn't get hurt working out. He didn't get hurt practicing. He got hurt in a game doing what he loves to do. That's what he got. He got hurt on the job. Okay? That's just a fact. The hard part of all of this is knowing that when your game, and all of us deal with this, when you're a young player, your game is predicated on your athletic ability, speed and quickness. All right? Now what you're seeing is Derrick Rose finding out how to be Derrick Rose, knowing very well that he doesn't need to rely on his speed and quickness, but that he wants to be just as effective while he's figuring out who he is. All right? Now, what does that mean? I'll give you an example. When Michael Jordan came into this league, Michael Jordan was an athlete. He was an athlete's athlete. He was running, dunking, jumping, doing all those things. When he came back from the foot injury, he was a totally different player. He was a totally different player. Suddenly now, instead of you talking about him dunking on people, you started talking about the fadeaway. The 30 points were still there. He just did it in a different way. The funny thing that I watch young players today is they're fading away and don't even know why they're fading away. The young Michael Jordan never would have shot a fadeaway. Now, what you're seeing with Derrick Rose, because it's a different time, you know, we didn't have social media. We can dissect and do things immediately. What you're seeing Derrick Rose go through now is he's figuring out how to play this league now is played at a pace. We're seeing games now. When Derrick Rose got hurt, I think it was in 2012, I believe, somewhere around there, the game was played differently than it's played right now in 2017. We're seeing teams today play at a different pace. I just watched a game the other night with the Houston Rockets where they shot over 50 threes in a game. That's a different game than they were playing in 2012. That was a different game than it was 15 years ago, 10 to 15 years ago. The pace of the game is different. The speed of the game is different. How you play, how you defend. There's no more fighting through picks. Everyone switches. There's no more, you know, trying to move the ball around. You just get the first good three. So this is a different game. What you're seeing with him, and you see with any player, is they have to figure out how to play this new game because they miss a year or two in Derrick's case. They've missed that time. You can't not make up lost time. But what you can do is figure out and go through the process to figure out how to be successful. So people say he's not where he's at. Here's a kid now that's on a new team that's averaging 18 points and about 5 assists a game. That's not bad. It's not bad. That's not that. So he's not far off from average, getting two more baskets and getting to the free throw line. That gives him 24 points a game or somewhere around there. What more can you ask in this league? Okay, this league, right? This league is a different league than it was 2 or 3 years ago. Steph Curry and the three ball has really created a different game. The stretch four in our game today, and I say our game, in the NBA game today, has created an entirely different way of playing and preparing for a game of basketball. One of my clients, Draymond Green, is, I don't know what his real effect is on the game, but I just know that he's really affecting the game as a 6'7", 6'8", power forward, and he can play center, power forward. He guards ones, twos, threes, fours, and fives. That there is as unique as I've seen in this league. Ryan Anderson, who plays for the Houston Rockets, that stretch four has really created problems and havoc on the game over the last 2 or 3 years. So it's a different game. Derrick is learning this different game. He's learning that, you know, the system and the coaches and the way they play is different. So I would love to think that the things will remain the same and play. If Michael Jordan was playing today, he would be playing a different game because the rules and the way they play is different. You know, if we shot 7 or 8 threes as a team back when we played, that was a lot of threes. Now, I mean, Vince Carter, I just saw he had like 6 or 7 threes by himself at 40 years of age last night or the night before. So when people say they compare the numbers, okay, he's not averaging 25 like he did that year. But to watch how he's changing his game to be effective and play and be consistent, it's all about consistently knowing what you can do night in and night out. The goal of every player that comes in the NBA is to be a professional. And a professional does what he does every single night. So I am thrilled the fact that Derrick is putting together consistently where he can average 18 to 20 somewhere points a game right now at this stage in his career. And this being really, I guess this is the second season of him coming back where he's been able to play over 60, 70 games. I'm thrilled. He's thrilled. Now he knows what he has to do. And I think next year you will see Derrick Rose because now his conditioning will be better. Now he's getting an understanding of how this league is played. And I think you'll see him be even better next year than he was this year.
He is B.J. Armstrong. He's got a podcast, too, B.J. and Bucher. And it's got a website, bjandbucher.com, so people can go check out the podcast. You guys have all kinds of different athletes on there and obviously talk NBA throughout the week. B.J. Armstrong, thanks for listening to another edition of the NBA Show. If you dig what you're hearing, give us a rating and review on iTunes, and we will talk to you tomorrow. All this month, we're asking you to tell a friend about a podcast they'll love. Right now, think of a friend, your mom, anyone you care about. What podcast would they really love? Got it? Now do it. Tell them about it in real life or on social media. And if they don't know about podcasts, show them how. Tell us what you recommended using the hashtag TryPod. TryPod. Thanks for spreading the word.